Hello and welcome to Beyond Reproach. This is Stephanie Domingo.
And this is Tux Lerzel.
We come to you from Bushwick, Brooklyn, where we record on land belonging to the Lenape Nation, a nation that is one of many still very much out here doing its thing, and we like to acknowledge that. Mm-hmm. This is a show where we talk about whatever the fuck we want, because we don't have any format for this minisode.
Nope, we sure don't, and we will be talking about whatever.
Deal with it,
okay? Boom.
We be drinking, we be swearing, y'all.
Uh-huh, fuck yeah. So today, I'm going to be talking about...
Oh, I was about to take a sip, but Alexander Hamilton, a sip can wait.
Yes, there we go. There's singing happening. Yeah, so last week, I talked about... Our dear friend, Gouverneur Morris.
What a guy.
I know.
What a legend.
I mean, yes. The man, the myth.
The man no one knew about. I, like, what?
Why is he not everyone's favorite founding father? I mean, he is now.
Yes. He's the only one I ride for.
Yeah, absolutely. Even though he called poor people reptiles.
You know... He is a man. Exactly. He is a human. He is flawed, but he did a lot of great things.
We can't have a founding father without him being a little bit problematic, at least. But yeah, so I mentioned in that episode the possibility that he and...
Alexander Hamilton.
May have potentially maybe had some sort of same-sex relationship or at least a flirtation.
Okay.
So today I'm going to be talking a little bit more about that. Most of you already know that Hamilton was well known for his love of women.
Sure was.
Yeah. We know that he was married to Elizabeth. Is it Schuyler?
Schuyler.
Okay. Yeah. I wasn't sure if it was Schuyler.
I mean, unless Hamilton the musical has lied to me.
Okay. Schuyler.
Which they would never do.
They would never. I just didn't want to be the liar. Schuyler? That makes more sense.
Schuyler.
It makes more sense.
Now to be I'm Schuyler. Second guessing myself.
It's Schuyler.
Okay.
I've decided.
Okay. It has been written.
Yes.
You drop your gavel.
Yes, exactly. So we know that he was married to Elizabeth Schuyler and they had 8 children.
They had 8 kids?
I believe that's what my research told me today. Okay. One of them died in a duel.
Yes.
Someday we might even talk about the story of his affair with Maria Reynolds.
Yeah.
I know that a lot of people already know that story, especially if you have seen Hamilton the musical.
Or even just listen to the music on Spotify.
So people will know that story. It's not going to be a shock to anyone to hear that Hamilton had an affair. But I do still think that it's an interesting story and people would find it entertaining to hear us do a deeper dive into it.
I would love to hear the act, like what he, like how he told on himself.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think, you know, people know that it happened, but probably don't know all the details. And there have been plenty of stories that we have told on the show that some people have already heard. But hearing all this, all of the details on how things go down is a very different thing than hearing in passing that,
always.
Like, hey, Alexander Hamilton had an affair with a married woman.
And told on himself in the papers.
Yes. I also do think at some point we should cover it because it was literally America's first ever political sex scandal.
Yeah.
It's something that we have to do.
Yeah, need to do it.
It is our duty.
Oh, you said duty. I'm pretending to be... Jason.
Yes. You forgot your boyfriend's name.
Well, I was gonna, because he never listens. He doesn't like when I call him my partner, but whatever.
Okay. Either way, we know Hamilton was super charming. We know that he liked to find ways to make himself the center of attention when pretty women were around. But I think what a lot of people...
He thought he was the cock of the walk?
Yes, he did think...
little but he was the cock of nothing.
Cock of nothing.
No one gets that but us. It's a Simpsons reference. It makes
Homer Simpson is cock of nothing.
It makes no sense, but I love it.
Yeah. Most people do not know, however, that there's historical evidence pointing to the fact that Alexander Hamilton may have possibly been bisexual.
Okay.
No one can say this with absolute certainty, obviously, but many historians do believe that he was having romantic and sexual relationships with men as well as women.
Okay.
While Hamilton was at King's College when he was young, he had a roommate named Robert Troup. Troup actually graduated before him. He was a few years ahead of Hamilton, but he stayed on after graduating and stayed in their like dorm room together for a year after he graduated.
Okay.
So that they could live together. According to Troup, they, quote, occupied the same room and slept in the same bed.
Okay.
When Troup finally moved out, Hamilton gave him, quote, a thick sheaf of poems.
Aww.
Yes.
Wow, that's sweet.
Yes. Troup said that he lost those poems during the Revolutionary War, which is entirely possible. War is crazy. Of course, that is a possibility. But it is also entirely possible that he intentionally hid or destroyed them to protect Hamilton's legacy. Mm. Because this man, Troup, went on to become Hamilton's biographer.
Okay.
So he was very concerned about legacy.
Mm.
He remained close with Hamilton until his death. In fact, the day of the duel he had with Aaron Burr, Hamilton spent an hour alone with Robert Troup, knowing that that might be his last day on Earth.
Whoa.
Yes.
That's intense.
So there isn't obviously a ton of evidence that they had a romantic relationship, but historians say that there is also evidence that Troup had relationships with other men, including possibly, maybe, Aaron Burr.
No.
Yes.
No. Yes. So this guy was just like a bachelor?
I guess, yeah.
Okay.
All of these men in this story, I don't know about Troup, actually. I shouldn't say that. But the main player in this story, other than Hamilton, was also married to a woman.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know if he was a bachelor or not, Troup. But either way.
Okay. So bisexual men.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. If you're not really convinced by that evidence about Troup, don't worry, I got you. There's more coming.
Yes.
When Hamilton was in the Continental Army, he met a young man named John Laurens from South Carolina. Laurens was also an aide-de-camp to George Washington. So at this point in the late 18th century, it was really common for gentlemen to write heartfelt, emotional letters to one another. It was common for them to even say that they loved each other in these letters.
I wish that was still a thing.
I know, yeah.
What happened?
For men to have to be in touch with their emotions.
Yeah, well, emotions other than anger.
Yeah, yeah.
Because men have rebranded anger as not an emotion.
Yeah.
Like, they're so fucking logical and rational. It's like, y'all are so emotional. Yeah. Just look at yourselves.
You only allow yourself to experience one.
Yeah. And yeah. The way you express it is insane.
Yeah. So Hamilton's letters to John Laurens go way beyond what was normal or common for the way that they would write to each other.
Okay.
This is much more emotional and much more heartfelt than it would otherwise be. In 1779, Hamilton wrote one of his first letters to Laurens, basically saying that since Laurens had left their headquarters with George Washington, Hamilton had discovered just how much he loved him.
Oh, wow.
He wrote, "I wish my dear Laurens..." I have to stop myself right here.
Oh.
I just want to say, by the way, it was not at all common for someone to write the words "my dear" when referring to a platonic friend.
Oh, okay.
You would only say "my dear" if you were talking about a romantic interest or a potential love.
Mm.
When I was doing my research, that was pointed out, that this is like a big deal that he wrote. He called Laurens "my dear." "I wish, my dear Laurens, it might be in my power, by action rather than words, to convince you that I love you. I shall only tell you that till you bade us adieu, I hardly knew the value you had taught my heart to set upon you. Indeed, my friend, it was not well done. You know the opinion I entertain of mankind and how much it is my desire to preserve myself free from particular attachments and to keep my happiness independent of the caprice of others. You should not have taken advantage of my sensibility to steal into my affections without my consent.
Ooh.
But as you have done it, and as we are generally indulgent to those we love, I shall not scruple to pardon the fraud you have committed on condition that for my sake, if not for your own, you will always continue to merit the partiality which you have so artfully instilled into me."
Wow.
Yes. So like I said, it was common for men to write that they loved each other and be emotional with each other, but it was not common for straight men to write entire paragraphs to each other about how much they loved each other, or to say things like chastising them for stealing their hearts.
Yeah.
That was a little extra.
Wow. Yeah. It feels steamy.
Yes, exactly. Literally, you stole my heart.
Aww.
Later in the same letter, he brings up the idea of marriage, of getting married. He really didn't want a wife. He says this a lot in a lot of his letters, that he does not want to be married. He jokingly brought up the possibility that Lawrence would put an ad in the paper to find him a wife. Oh. He's saying that Lawrence should put an ad in the paper to find Hamilton a wife.
Oh.
And he tells Lawrence what to say in the ad, describing his ideal mate. Some historians believe that what's really going on here is that he's telling Lawrence that he fits the requirements that he would be looking for in a partner.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And some people also suspect that he may have been trying to see how Lawrence would react to the idea of being replaced by a wife,
mm-hmm.
and hoping that he would tell him not to marry.
Yeah. He'd get jealous.
Yeah, exactly. He goes on in this letter to say that the ad should include a description of himself for this future wife to, like, learn about what she's getting herself into.
Was this a thing that was common?
No.
Like, oh, okay.
Yeah, no. He's kind of making a joke,
yeah.
but, like, he's testing the waters, really, in a big way. He writes, "To excite their emulation, it will be necessary for you to give an account of the lover. His size, make, quality of mind and body, achievements, expectations, fortune, etc. In drawing my picture, you will no doubt be civil to your friend. Mind you do justice to the length of my nose, and don't forget that I..." And then the next words are actually cut out of this letter, removed from the paper.
What?
This was most likely done by one of Hamilton's sons after his death.
Oh.
So the thing is, that phrase, "the length of my nose," he's saying, "do justice to the length of my nose," that was a very well-known euphemism at the time for the length of a man's penis.
Ah, okay.
Yes. So he's probably, in those next words that have been removed, he's probably referencing the fact that they have seen each other naked.
Oh, okay.
Or maybe even something more explicit.
Got it.
Than that. We don't know. We have no way of knowing for sure, but that's probably what's happening. So it's funny to me because I'd always heard, you know, like when I was a young man, I'd heard that idea that a big nose meant a big dick.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, don't forget to tell them how long my nose is.
That is very funny.
Yeah.
That's clever.
Yeah. So it is funny to hear that they were saying this even in the Revolutionary War, as far back as that, or even maybe even earlier. Stephanie.
I recently found, it's recently come to my attention.
Yes.
That there was a study done that correlates the length of someone's nose. Well, they use cadavers, so it's...
And there was only... It was a very small...
A very small study, but it was the first study that tried to measure, to see if there's anything to that idea that the length of someone's nose is correlated with the length of their peen.
Yes, and they said yes.
Yes, they have evidence to confirm that in a small sample size, so they have to do more research to really... Nail that down. But
they did write in this article, too, that the foot size thing is not...
Not true.
Not true at all.
Yeah.
But there is something to that nose.
And I've always been attracted to men with bigger noses.
Yeah.
And I never even, like, put that together.
I love a big nose.
Me too. Yeah.
So I think this might be a good time to take a little break.
Yeah.
I'm going to go measure the size of my nose.
Yes. I'm going to look at pictures of Adrian Brody, which I know that you can't get down with. But knowing this research, perhaps you can.
BRB.
Welcome to Hashtag History. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Leah.
And if you're a history nerd, or even a history hater,
this is the podcast for you.
Even if history was your least favorite subject in school, we can guarantee you will like this podcast because we talk about all the things that your history textbooks did not.
Things like how the Bonnie Prince Charles and his Jacobite uprising was a bit of a disaster.
Yeah, or how the pharaoh Akhenaten was so disliked by Egyptians that they literally purged his name from nearly all of their records and pretended like he had never existed.
And we do all of this while drinking and rating a custom-made cocktail specific to that week's topic.
So grab a drink, take a seat, and hang out with us each week as we learn all about history's greatest stories of controversy,
conspiracy,
and corruption.
We're back. We just talked some more about Adrian Brody.
Yes.
It's just a little, he's not unattractive. He's just a little too skinny for me.
He is very skinny.
I bet he has a very large penis, though.
I know that he does.
Yeah. Tall and skinny with a big nose.
Yeah. He is not aging the best.
I'm which sure. Which makes me like, what the fuck are you really talking sad. About right now?
I think he's attractive. Or at least he was attractive at one point in time.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think he's unattractive. He's just not for me. Just fair. I like a man with a little meat on his bones.
Yes. Same.
All right. So during the Revolutionary War, there's evidence that other soldiers were saying that they rarely ever saw Hamilton and Lawrence apart while they were at camp together. They later shared a cabin together at Valley Forge during the war. And when Lawrence finally went back to his home state of South Carolina to protect South Carolina from the British, Hamilton begged Washington to let him go too. Mm. Georgie was like, no, you're staying up here with us.
Yeah. We need you.
Yeah, exactly. So at the time, same-sex relationships were really, really taboo. Sodomy was a punishable offense in all 13 colonies. So this was not something people did openly.
Punishable by like what?
Oh, I don't know exactly, but it was, illegal. It was illegal.
Got it.
It still does seem like his fellow soldiers or their fellow soldiers probably did know something was going on, that these men had a very special friendship.
Yeah.
Some kind of idea, at least. And they basically just looked the other way because they weren't the only men who were doing this in the Continental Army. Another member of Washington's staff, Frederick Wilhelm von Steuben, was very widely known for having affairs with men, basically kind of out in the open. He didn't care that people knew. And he had actually come to the United States, well, not the U.S., come to the colonies because he was fleeing Prussia on sodomy charges.
Wow.
Yeah. So like everyone knew, and he was just really good at being in the army. So George Washington's like, get in here. Who cares?
We need you.
Yeah. In another letter that Hamilton wrote Lawrence in September of 1799, he describes himself as a jealous lover when Lawrence didn't respond to some of his letters quickly enough.
Oh, wow.
Like a jealous lover, when I thought you slighted my caress, my affection was alarmed and my vanity piqued.
Oh, wow. That's not subtle.
No, yeah, not at all.
What?
Yeah. Later in the letter, he does say that he, like, received something from him or heard from him, so all has been forgiven.
Okay. Oh, wow. He had the feels.
Yes, exactly. He had the vapors.
Yeah.
Yeah. In 1780, Lawrence was actually captured by the British and held as a prisoner of war.
Oh.
He couldn't leave. I don't know if it was because he was, like, high up in the army or whatever, but he was treated pretty well. He was able to write and receive letters.
Okay.
He just couldn't leave.
Mm.
So in September, Hamilton wrote him just a few months before his marriage. Hamilton wrote, in spite of Schuyler's black eyes, and he's saying this as like, she has beautiful dark eyes.
Essentially. Oh, okay.
Not
I'm
that
just
he's
like, what?
Yeah, no. He's referenced her black eyes in multiple letters, but saying that they were like beautiful dark eyes.
Mm.
In spite of Schuyler's black eyes, I still have a part for the public and another for you. So your impatience to have me married is misplaced. A strange cure, by the way, as if after matrimony I was to be less devoted than I am now.
Mm.
So basically what he's saying here is, well, first of all, that there is a part of him, the part of him that loves Lawrence, is to be kept secret. Can't be shared with the public, especially his fiance. He can't let anyone see that part of himself. But he also may be implying here that he's really only marrying for appearances. That Lawrence was kind of pressuring him to marry because he was already married himself and potentially could be saying that it's going to look better to the public if he's married, but his heart will still belong to Lawrence.
Okay.
Later in the same letter, he says that he wishes Lawrence could leave his captivity and be there on their wedding day. He says, I would invite you after the fall to Albany to be witness to the final consummation.
What?
Yes.
Like.
So some people sort of speculate that he's basically saying, like, I wish you could be here for my wedding, like, see me get married. But other people are like, no,
like
he's saying he wishes he could be there on his wedding night and be in bed with the two of them. So he essentially was hoping to be like a throuple.
Oh, that's hot.
But he goes on in this letter to say, my mistress is a good girl and already loved you because I have told her you are a clever fellow and my friend. But mind you, she loves you a l'Américaine and not a la Françoise.
Okay.
Yes.
Wow.
So in my last episode, I talked about how open the French were about marriage.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Hamilton's basically saying that his wife is too American in her thinking and would not be into an open marriage. Basically, she's not down for a throuple. So as much as he wishes he could be there on their wedding night to witness the final consummation, he knows that his wife would not be down for that.
That's the power of culture.
Yeah.
That it's so normalized in France that it's like, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
As long as everyone's like in the know, like who really cares kind of thing. But yeah, they don't have that strict gender binary that we are still struggling with over here.
Unfortunately, Lawrence was killed by British forces in 1872. And Hamilton was devastated, completely devastated. He was a really, really prolific writer. He would write about anything and everything that was going on in his life. Any thought that popped into his mind, he wrote it down. But he wrote almost nothing about Lawrence's death because he was so hurt by it.
Oh,
he
my God.
Couldn't put pen to paper.
Wow. The love of his life, potentially.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, it does look like he really did love his wife eventually. Yeah. But in the beginning, he really did not want to be married.
It's like she's wealthy, might as well kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And then after Hamilton's death, his family went through their letters and crossed out a lot of sections of the letters, even cut out some sections of the letters so that no one would ever be able to read them. His son, one of his sons, even wrote a note at the top of one of the letters saying, I must not publish the whole of this.
Oh.
So there's some speculation that these letters may have actually confirmed the fact that they were having a romantic or sexual relationship, and he just didn't want to let that out.
Yeah.
We'll probably never
stain his legacy.
Exactly.
Eye roll.
Yeah. We're never going to know for sure because, you know, we can't get the
Seems mighty suspicious, though.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. Yeah.
Like, why are you cutting out words?
Yeah,
from
what's
a letter
being said here? Exactly. And like, in the
why
same
even show us the letter?
I know. And in the same sentence where he's saying, like, talking about his penis, in the same sentence, you're going to cut out the rest. Why not cut out the whole thing or just destroy the letter entirely?
Maybe he didn't get the reference.
Yeah. Yeah, it's possible.
Maybe it was something that only like people who are like bi were saying. I don't know.
I mean, it was a common thing to use the length of your nose as like a reference to a penis, but maybe it was a generational thing or maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure. At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter what Alexander Hamilton's sexuality was. Like, it doesn't change the fact that he was a founding father.
Absolutely not.
But I do think that it's interesting, and I thought that some of you would enjoy hearing about it. And I do also think that it makes the founding fathers feel more human, that they could be – these are just people.
Yeah.
Like having complicated, messy relationships and, you know, living their lives. They're just men.
Yeah, they're just men. They're
potentially bisexual men.
Yeah. I love hearing about just the richness of who these, you know – I mean, everyone who listens to the podcast knows that, you know, I don't really give a fuck about men, but I do like hearing like the color.
Yeah.
You know, just the richness of these men's lives.
Yeah.
Here, it makes it more relatable.
It's been, you know, 250 years since this happened. And I think it's a lot of, it's very easy for Americans to look at these men and deify them and think of them as just one specific thing.
Exactly.
And they were just men.
They
had full lives. Yeah.
I think as time goes on, we're going to learn more and more about these figures just from history. Like George Washington Carver was also bisexual.
Oh, wow.
Like, yeah. We just learn about their accomplishments. We don't really learn about who they were as people.
Yeah, exactly.
And I like any opportunity that shows us like the full spectrum of like what these people were like. Like, I didn't know we had a disabled founding father.
I know.
What? Yeah. That's amazing. Why aren't we learning about this?
Because we don't learn about him at all, period.
He was doing a lot of things that were kind of, frowned upon at the time.
Yeah, exactly. But... Or maybe even more frowned upon now than they were at the time. I will say, before we wrap this up, that it does appear that when I said that there was a possibility that Gouverneur Morris may have also had some kind of a relationship with Hamilton, the letters that these historians are basing that hypothesis on, Hamilton was a lot more flirty with Morris than Morris was with Hamilton.
That's funny.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a lot more being said by Hamilton than the other way around. Okay. Now, that might not have been true in person.
Yeah.
But I think that at least the letters were sort of, he was a little bit more careful.
Yeah.
Morris. Yeah.
Okay.
Which is funny because he wasn't careful with his diaries, but maybe he was with letters.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah, that was great. Thank you for that. Because I had heard a little, some whispers.
Yeah.
About Lawrence and Hamilton.
Yeah.
Yeah, just looking online, other Hamilton stands were talking about like, oh, did you see that look between Lawrence and Hamilton? And I'm just like, what? And then I rewatched it. I'm like, oh, yeah. And
oh,
like,
in the actual musical.
In the actual musical, there's like a look and there's like, they touch each other in a way that's very like sexful.
Huh.
There's like two scenes, and maybe I'll clip them and add them to the Instagram or something. Or,
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'll put them in the show notes.
Check out our Instagram or our show notes or both.
Like, I see what they were saying.
Yeah.
Like, there was this moment when he like holds on to his hand in a way and like kind of.
Yeah.
He doesn't wink, but it's like there's a look there.
Yeah, exactly.
So hearing about the two of them and their communication is his like connected the dots for me.
Totally.
So yeah, great story. Thank you.
Thanks.
My drink is, you know, it's getting there. It's getting there. I think we're done.
We're done.
Bye. No. Thank you so much for listening to Beyond Approach. This has been Stephanie Domingo.
Tux Lerzel.
Thank you to Tim Clough, our editor, sound engineer, and podfather. We could not do this without him.
We could not.
Yes. Facts are facts, America.
All right.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Beyond Reproach is proudly recorded in Bushwick, Brooklyn, on land belonging to the Lenape Nation. Please note we are not historians. We are just a couple of drunks who never shut up and love history. Full list of all source information can be found in the show notes on our website. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe. Written reviews are especially important. If you like us, please do one of two things. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, or send this episode to a friend, family member, or someone who you think would be into it. Make sure you follow us on Instagram because we post our cocktail recipes the Thursday before each full episode. Please drink along with us if you are not driving. We also have a shop on beyondreproachpod.com. Get your merch, brand yourselves. We have exclusive content on Patreon where you can directly support the production of our show.